As the new Renaissance actualized, the world stood at the edge of a revolution. The internet, once an obscure network used primarily by academics, experimenters, and curious early adopters, was fleetly weaving itself into the fabric of everyday life. By the time 2000, dispatch had begun to replace letters, online hunt machines were displacing libraries, and digital commerce like Amazon and eBay suggested a future where commerce might transcend physical boundaries. For Tim Berners-Lee, the creator of the World Wide Web, this period was both stirring and deeply concerning. He could see the eventuality for the web to homogenize knowledge and empower individualities, but he also saw pitfalls: marketable monopolization, walled auditoriums of defined information, and the corrosion of openness that he'd always envisaged as the foundation of the web. Tim had spent the late 1990s championing for a web that would remain open, universal, and free. But as the early 2000s progressed, the battle for the web's soul came fiercer. POTS were rushing to dominate online spaces. Governments were beginning to see the internet as both a tool and a trouble, and ordinary druggies were discovering the pleasures and threats of a digitally connected world. It was in this shifting geography that Tim's part as both innovator and guardian of the web came more critical than ever. The W3C in a new millennium, the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C, which Tim had innovated in 1994 at MIT, entered the 2000s as a de facto global authority on web norms. By this point, the W3C had developed essential protocols for HTML, CSS, and XML, which formed the backbone of how websites were created and displayed. But the challenges ahead were dispiriting. New technologies were arising fleetly: multimedia content, interactive scripts, mobile bias, and each brought with the threat of fragmentation. Tim was deeply apprehensive of what fragmentation could mean. However, the universality of the web would be destroyed if different companies or nations espouse their own inharmonious norms. A stoner in one country might not be suitable to pierce a website created in another. Software developed for one platform might be useless on another. The worldwide part of the web would collapse into insulated silos. To help this, Tim and his associates at W3C worked lifelessly to ensure that web norms were espoused widely. He frequently emphasized the significance of interoperability. A website should work anyhow which cyber surfer someone used, whether it was Netscape, Internet Explorer, or the recently arising Mozilla Firefox. He claimed that no single company should be allowed to mandate the future of the web through personal norms. But this was easier said than done. In the early 2000s, Microsoft's Internet Discover dominated the cyber surfer quest, holding further than 90 of druggies at its peak. Microsoft frequently enforced features that went beyond sanctioned web norms, soliciting inventors to use them. But if inventors reckoned too heavily on these features, their websites would not work duly on other cyber surfers. This cyber surfer war wasn't just a competition between companies. It was a direct challenge to the idea of an open and universal web. Tim responded not with battle, but with continuity. He continued to push for open norms through the W3C, encouraging collaboration, and prevailing indeed the most important POTS that universal comedy was in their stylish interest. His quiet tactfulness frequently varied with the aggressive commercial tactics of the time, but it was precisely his calm, principled approach that allowed the W3C to maintain credibility as a neutral body serving the entire internet. The FleckCom bubble and its assignments the early 2000s were also marked by the detonation of the FleckCom bubble. Throughout the late 1990s, academic investment in internet companies had driven valuations to unsustainable heights. Startups with little further than a website and a vague business plan attracted millions in venture capital. By 2000, still, reality caught up and the bubble burst. In numerous companies collapsed, investors lost fortunes, and critics declared that the internet had been a passing style. For Tim, the crash was both sobering and clarifying. He'd always believed that the web was not simply a business, but a medium for communication, knowledge, and collaboration. The bubble's collapse reminded the world that enterprise alone could not sustain the web's growth. However, it would need deeper foundations: ethical, social, yet the internet was to be a lasting force for good. Tim spoke intimately about the troubles of treating the web purely as a marketable space. He emphasized the need for balanced commerce was a natural and important part of the web, but it could not be allowed to dominate or distort it. However, it's true implicit to connect people, to partake knowledge, if the web came nothing further than a platform for advertising and profit. In the times following the crash, numerous of the companies that survived, Amazon, eBay, and latterly Google, proved that sustainable business models could live online. But Tim remained watchful. He knew that the survival of the web's openness would depend not only on technology, but also on the values that guided its development. The birth of the semantic web, one of Tim's most ambitious systems in the early 2000s, was a development of what he called a semantic web. From the morning, he'd imagined the web as further than just a collection of linked documents. He wanted it to be a web of data, information that machines as well as humans could understand and process. The semantic web was an attempt to realize that vision. Rather than simply displaying information, websites could render meaning in a way that computers could interpret. For illustration, a mortal reading a web page might understand that Paris appertained to a megacity in France. But to a machine, Paris could just as fluently mean the mythological figure from Greek history. The semantic web aimed to resolve this nebulosity by giving information unequivocal structure and environment. Tim believed that this would unleash a new period of discovery and invention. Machines could automatically connect data from different sources, enabling important new operations. For case, a semantic web, enable hunt machine might not just return runners containing the word croaker, but might also connect you to databases of licensed medical professionals, patient reviews, and appointment scheduling systems. It could help scientists partake exploration data across disciplines, or allow governments to publish information in ways that citizens and other agencies could fluently use. Yet the semantic web was a daunting challenge. It needed not just new specialized norms, but also wide relinquishment by website generators, businesses, and governments. Numerous were reluctant, seeing it as too complex or too abstract. Critics dismissed it as an academic dream, far removed from the messy realities of the internet. Tim still was undeterred. He traveled considerably, giving lectures, writing papers, and promoting the semantic web as the coming great vault forward. He frequently compared it to the early days of the World Wide Web itself. At first, many had understood the value of linking documents through hyperlinks. Now, many could imagine life without it. He believed the same would one day be true for linking data. Particular reflections despite his growing global influence, Tim remained a deeply private and humble existent. He frequently preferred the quiet of his study to the limelight, and associates noted his calm, nearly pensive address. Yet beneath that calmness was an unvarying determination. In his particular life, the early 2000s brought change as well. Tim had married Nancy Carlson in 1990, but the couple disassociated in 2011. During this earlier period still, he balanced family life with the immense demands of his professional charge. Musketeers recalled his capability to remain predicated, indeed as his creation converted the world around him. He still enjoyed tinkering with law, riding his bike, and spending time in reflection. What struck those who knew him stylish was his thickness of values. Whether speaking heads of state or to a room of scholars, Tim returned again and again to the same principles: universality, openness, and the responsibility to use technology for the common good. A growing public figure as the 2000s progressed, Tim set up himself decreasingly in the public eye. He gave keynote speeches at major conferences, witnessed before governments, and appeared in the media as a father of the web. While he occasionally sounded uncomfortable with the idle deification that girdled him, he honored the significance of using his visibility to advocate for the principles he held dear. He came particularly oral about the troubles of centralized control. In a period when governments were expanding their surveillance powers in the wake of the September 11, 2001 attacks, Tim argued that sequestration and freedom must remain central to the web's development. He advised that immolating these values in the name of security could lead to a future where the internet became a tool of control rather than emancipation. By 2005, the web was at a crossroads. Social media platforms like MySpace were rising, blogs were proliferating, and the first signs of what would latterly be called Web 2.0 were arising. The internet was no longer just a library of documents. It was getting a space where people live their social, artistic, and profitable lives. For Tim Berners-Lee, this was both a triumph and a challenge. His invention had truly gone global, but whether it would remain true to his vision was far from certain. As he looked ahead, Tim knew the struggle for the web's soul was only beginning. The choices made in the coming times by governments, POTS, and citizens would determine whether the web remained an open, universal resource or whether it disintegrated into walled auditoriums and surveillance countries. And formally again, Tim would be at the heart of that struggle. The dawn of the 2000s was a period of metamorphosis for the digital world. The web, which had started as a network for academics and experimenters, was fleetly getting a space of culture, commerce, politics, and mortal commerce. Tim Berners-Lee, the quiet colonist who had unleashed this invention, watched both with pride and concern. The original vision he carried in his mind had always been one of openness, equivalency, and access for all. Yet, as POTS, governments, and new social forces entered the arena, the web was changing in ways he'd both anticipated and stressed. By 2003, a new miracle began to capture global attention: the rise of the social web. Platforms like Friendster, MySpace, and latterly Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube readdressed what it meant to use the internet. Rather passively reading static web runners, druggies now created content, connected with others, and formed vast online communities. For Berners-Lee, this was a natural progression of his dream. The web was no longer about isolated information. It was about people, voices, and networks of ideas flowing at unknown pets. Still, the shift was not without pressure. Berners-Lee respected how the web enabled activism and popular movements. Ordinary people in small municipalities or developing countries could speak to the world. In his speeches during this time, he stressed how the web allowed the helpless to amplify their voices, bypassing traditional media doorkeepers. Yet, he also observed disquieting patterns walled auditoriums of platforms, personal algorithms deciding what billions of people saw, and particular data being gathered for profit. One of the issues that deeply unsettled him was the corrosion of sequestration. He began advising that as druggies participated their lives online, POTS and governments collected vast troves of data without translucency or stone of control. Berners-Lee argued that this violated one of the core principles of the web decentralization. Rather, of every existent being empowered, the web was consolidating into the hands of many companies. To him, the peril was not simply specialized but philosophical. However manipulated or cleaned, if the web came controlled. Around 2006, Berners-Lee began enhancing his sweats with the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C, to ensure that norms promoted openness and availability. The W3C worked on protocols for web security, semantic technologies, and availability guidelines that would allow people with disabilities to use the web completely. His vision of the semantic web, where data on the web would be structured so machines could understand it, remained a precedence. He imagined a world where health records, scientific data, government information, and indeed everyday schedules could be linked seamlessly, empowering druggies to find answers and connections that were preliminarily hidden. While the semantic web was slow to be realized, Berners-Lee no way wavered. He gave addresses across the world, averring that the coming great frontier was not just linking documents, but linking knowledge itself. Critics occasionally dismissed this as romantic or impracticable, but his continuity planted seeds in exploration communities and startups likewise. Over time, rudiments of his vision began appearing in technologies like linked open data, knowledge graphs, and AI-driven web services. In 2009, a remarkable chapter unfolded in his trip. The British Prime Minister, Gordon Brown, invited Berners-Lee to help lead a design for open government data. This was a turning point that brought his ideals closer to reality. The UK government began publishing vast quantities of public information: transport schedules, crime statistics, healthcare data free for citizens to use and introduce upon. Berners-Lee argued passionately that governments didn't enjoy data, citizens did. This movement spread encyclopedically, inspiring the United States and numerous other nations to embrace open data enterprise. It was a moment of triumph for Berners-Lee, proving that translucency and participation could be advanced through the veritably fabric of the web. Yet, the growing power of social networks and digital advertising ecosystems continue to trouble him. As Facebook grew into a global conglomerate, he bothered that people were losing control over their digital individualities. In one of his speeches, he advised, "The web is yours. Don't let it slip down into the hands of the many." His words reverberated deeply as dishonors began to crop about data abuse, surveillance, and the manipulation of online commerce. Berners, Lee's concern reached new heights during the Arab Spring in 2011. Social media platforms came tools of revolution, allowing protesters in Tunisia, Egypt, and beyond to organize and broadcast their struggles to the world. He celebrated this as evidence of the web's liberating power. But he also noted how administrations acclimated, using the veritably same platforms to track, bowdlerize, and suppress dissent. It corroborated his belief that a free web must be defended constantly, not taken for granted. Meanwhile, his professional life was a whirlwind of exertion. He continued directing the W3C, mentoring youthful technologists, and uniting with transnational associations. He also tutored at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, where he inspired scholars not only to write law but to suppose morally about the systems they were erecting. Associates frequently noted that despite his fame, he remained approachable, soft-spoken, and deeply principled. He preferred exchanges about ideas rather than accolades, and he constantly diverted credit to the cooperative spirit of the web's development. In 2012, as the web celebrated its 23rd birthday, Berners, Lee penned an open letter advising that the principles of openness were under siege. He spoke about the troubles of suppression, government surveillance, and POTS locking druggies into platforms where freedom of choice was limited. He declared that the internet wasn't simply a technology, but a mortal right. Access to knowledge, he argued, should no way depend on wealth, terrain, or political circumstance. Around this time, he also began to fantasize a new design SOLID, social link data. SOLID aimed to return control of data to individualities by allowing them to store their particular information in private capsules, accessible only with their authorization. The idea was revolutionary. Rather, companies retaining your data, you would enjoy it yourself and decide how and when to partake it. Berners, Lee began working on SOLID with experimenters and inventors at MIT and latterly through his company, Inrupt. For him, SOLID represented not only a specialized invention, but a moral imperative, restoring the balance of power to druggies in the age of commercial dominance. Public recognition for his work also continued. In 2004, he'd been knighted by Queen Elizabeth II, getting Sir Tim Berners-Lee. Over the following times, he entered multitudinous awards, including the Turing Award in 2016, frequently described as a Nobel Prize of Computing. Yet, he no way let these honors overshadow his charge. Whenever asked about his heritage, he reminded Cult that the true measure of the web was not in awards, but in whether it served humanity with fairness and freedom. By the mid-2010s, the stakes came indeed advanced. Fake news, election hindrance, and rising polarization showed how the web, while important, could also be weaponized. Berners, Lee didn't wince down from defying these realities. He spoke at global forums, prompting governments, POTS, and citizens to commit to a contract for the web. This contract, launched in 2019, laid out principles for icing that the web remain free, safe, and accessible for all. It called on companies to admire stoner sequestration, governments to guarantee universal access, and individualities to contribute appreciatively to online communities. For Berners-Lee, these sweats weren't about nostalgia for an idealized history, but about guarding the future. He saw the web as still youthful, still evolving, and still a threat. His own life, devoted to its creation and protection, had come thick from the very history of the digital age. He frequently remarked that the web was like a glass of humanity. It reflected both the good and the bad. The challenge, he claimed, was to nurture the good and defy the detriment without losing sight of the original dream. As he approached his after times, Berners, Lee didn't retreat from public life. Rather, he embraced the part of guardian and schoolteacher. His quiet determination and ethical clarity made him a moral compass in a period of rapid-fire technological bouleversement. While CEOs chased gains and politicians batted regulation, he reminded the world of a simple verity: the web was erected for everyone. The dawn of the new Renaissance was formally filled with the pledge of extraordinary digital metamorphosis. Broadband internet was spreading across homes. Smartphones were beginning to crop, and the global frugality was getting more dependent on digital overflows than on traditional goods. For Tim Berners-Lee, still, the story of the World Wide Web was far from complete. He believed the coming great frontier was not simply connecting people, but connecting knowledge itself into a vast, meaningful network, a web of data rather than just documents. The rise of the semantic web in the early 2000s, Berners-Lee began to outline his vision for what he called the semantic web. The idea was deceptively simple. While the web was full of information, much of it was locked in unshaped formats, textbook, images, and raw HTML, that computers could display but not truly understand. If machines could grasp not only the words but the connections between them, also the web could evolve into commodity, much more important. Search machines would then just find runners containing keywords they could infer meaning, compare knowledge, and indeed reason about data. For illustration, if someone searched, "What croaker specialized in heart surgery within 20 long halls of Boston and accept a certain insurance provider?" a conventional hum machine would struggle because it reckoned on indexing words, not interpreting connections. The semantic web, on the other hand, would connect structured data from hospitals, insurance companies, and medical exploration databases, delivering an exact, individualized answer. Berners-Lee argued that this approach would be the coming giant vault in the web's elaboration, much like the shift from static web runners to interactive, stoner-driven platforms. He published papers, gave addresses, and banded with the World Wide Web Consortium, W3C, to regularize tools like RDF, Resource Description Framework, and OWL, Web Ontology Language, both designed to let data talk to each other across platforms. Yet, despite his enthusiasm, the semantic web proved harder to apply than numerous anticipated. While some academic systems embraced it, assiduity players were slow to borrow. The complexity of creating ontologies, participative vocabularies for machines to interpret meaning, and the lack of immediate marketable lucre limited its spread. Critics indeed began calling it a romantic dream, but Berners-Lee remained loyal, convinced that indeed the path was slow. The idea of a smarter web was ineluctable. Championing for openness resembling to his work on the semantic web, Berners-Lee came decreasingly oral about issues of internet governance and digital rights. The early 2000s were marked by heated debates over who controlled the structure of the internet. Would it remain an open platform, or would large pots and governments seek to enclose it within their own boundaries? In 2003, Berners-Lee advised against the troubles of walled auditoriums, closed ecosystems controlled by tech titans that limited druggies' freedom. While platforms like AOL and latterly Facebook and Apple offer convenience, they hover to undermine the web's open principles. "The web is more a social creation than a specialized one," he'd remind Cult. "It's about connecting humanity. To lock it up would be to betray its founding vision." These enterprises came more critical as net impartiality debates surfaced. Berners-Lee witnessed before governments, arguing that all data on the internet should be treated inversely, without service providers favoring or strangling certain content. His advocacy was necessary in shaping early programs that elevated the principle of impartiality in several countries. The Web Science Trust, by 2006, Berners-Lee honored that understanding the web needed further than specialized moxie. It demanded perceptivity from sociology, psychology, economics, and ethics. The web was no longer just a network of computers. It was a living ecosystem shaped by billions of mortal relations. To address this, he co-founded the Web Science Trust with associates at the University of Southampton and MIT. Its thing was to study the web as a mortal specialized miracle, much like biology studies life. The trust attracted experimenters from different disciplines, who anatomized everything from the spread of misinformation to the elaboration of online communities. Berners-Lee was particularly concerned about how misinformation and manipulation could erode trust in digital systems. He believed that scientific study of the web's dynamics could help heads like large-scale animation juggernauts or the abuse of particular data. Public recognition and influence by this point burners, Lee had formally entered some of the loftiest honors imaginable. In 2004, Queen Elizabeth II knighted him, making him Sir Tim Berners-Lee. He was also awarded the Millennium Technology Prize from Finland, frequently appertained to as a Nobel Prize of Technology. Latterly, he'd add the Turing Award, the loftiest honor in computer wisdom, to his collection, cementing his place among the great originators of history. Yet, despite his fame, Berners-Lee maintained his trademark modesty. He continued riding his bike to work in Cambridge, frequently showing up at conferences in casual vesture. When asked how he felt about being knighted, he joked, "It is an effect at how I decode." For him, the accolades were monuments of responsibility rather than particular triumphs. His growing recognition also gave him a larger platform to speak on pressing issues. During the late 2000s, he decreasingly advised against government surveillance and the troubles of unbounded data collection. The exposures from whistleblowers like Edward Snowden only corroborated his calls for a Magna Carta for the web, a Bill of Rights icing that the Internet remain free, private, and open. The Olympics and global symbolism, one of the most memorable moments of Berners-Lee's public life, came during the 2012 London Olympics opening form. In a performance celebrating British invention, he appeared on stage at an office with computer, codifying out the words, "This is for everyone." The communication was displayed across the Colosseum, beamed to millions of observers worldwide. It was an important memorial that the web was not created for profit or control, but for universal benefit. Numerous who had only vaguely known his name suddenly saw him as an artistic icon. The quiet innovator who had changed the way humanity connected, celebrated on the world's biggest stage. Seeds of the next revolution. As the 2010s progressed, Berners-Lee's focus shifted decreasingly toward reclaiming the web's original ideals. The rise of tech monopolies, mass surveillance, and data-driven advertising left him deeply troubled. He bothered that the Internet was drifting far from the open, egalitarian space he envisaged in 1989. Rather than empowering individualities, it sounded to be concentrating power in the hands of many pots. Determined to act, Berners-Lee began sketching out new fabrics for how the web might evolve. He started agitating ideas about particular data sovereignty, a system where druggies would control their own data and decide who could pierce it. This marked the morning of what would latterly come as Solid Design, a radical attempt toward decentralizing the Internet. But that story belonged to the coming chapter of his life. For now, Berners-Lee remained the patient gardener of the web, tending to its foundations, reminding the world that technology was not fortune. It was a choice. And the choices humanity made in the coming times would determine whether the web fulfilled its pledge of openness or came commodity darker.